السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Should we try that again? السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Sent Jazakallah. As is our custom, let us remember those departed souls who were with us last Muharram, who are not with us this Muharram, and all those relatives of those who have passed away. Let us recite Surah Fatiha after a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala
أعوذ بالله السميع العليم من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا أبو القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد
المحبين إطرة الطاهرين أما بعد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى في كتابه المجيد وفركانه الحميد وقوله الحق بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لن تنالوا البر حتى تنفقوا مما تحبون صلوات Mumineen, we've been talking about the journey of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, and why was it that Imam leaves Medina to go to Makkah and end up in Karbala. And we looked at the first lecture where we said that Karbala truly is an inspiration for us to reform. As we just heard, our dear sister Samina, a living example of how Karbala transforms someone's own life without any force, without being told, is that inspiration that Karbala gives us all. May Allah give us the tawfiq to actually make that change. Because when we began, we said that the test of our azad, the test of azadari that we have is, am I going to be a better human being this Muharram compared to the last Muharram? This indeed is a journey. In order to do that, we looked at the power of intentional living, and then we also looked at the power of critical thinking in terms of thinking that change. Because change just does not come from outside. The change must come from within, as Maulana Rum said, that I was clever, I was young, I wanted to change everybody else. Now I'm older and wiser, and all I can think of is change myself. And the idea is to change. And we said, in order to have that change, one needs to have time. And the 86,000, how many seconds? 86,400 seconds in a day that we have is the time that we have to put that thinking that we have done into action and deeds. Today, I present to you the value proposition of a human being. What is this blessing that Allah has given as human beings? And inshallah, we will look at that today. But just to give us that emotional connection to Karbala. You know, there is a human element in Karbala. And there's the divine element. When Imam goes on that journey, he went on a spiritual journey knowing what was going to happen. And the human element was that he knew the impact that was going to create of social justice until the day of judgment. And indeed, when we come to these assemblies, the azah of Aba Abdullah, truly our spirits actually soar spiritually with the divine element, with the spirit of Aba Abdullah. It gives us a level of sukoon. We will leave every comfort and we will be here because we want to pay tribute, because we want to soar spiritually with Aba Abdullah. And of course the human element was, as Imam went forth to say, but there must also be an impact so that the society becomes better. And the society can only become better when the individuals within that society become better. We become better human beings. The gathering of more human beings that come through makes it into a better society. And this truly is something that we need to understand. The ayah that Brother Ihtisham tried to paraphrase indeed is an ayah that needs to be understood. وَكَذَلِكَ جَعَلْنَاكُمْ أُمَّةً وَسَتًا لِتَكُونُوا شُهَدَاءَ عَلَى النَّاسِ. That we have created you a nation most balanced so that you may be a shahid, you may be a witness upon mankind. And this truly is our lot, to say that whether we go out in that procession and tell people who we are, those processions that we have in the name of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, and this is an appeal to the organizers from this platform, to say they must be relevant to the times. The message that must convey must be a relevant message so that people understand what Hussain ibn Ali stood for and the social justice that we stand for. These messages must be absolutely relevant to the times so that, as has been said in the past, that when we cry upon Hussein, let us not just cry on the tears of history. We must also cry upon him with the tears of the present, so that we are able to put forth the plight of those who are oppressed, the plight of those who do not have their rights, and indeed the plight of those who seek and who need something that we can give. Whatever we have been given is by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We are merely the channel and the means to do it. And the more we are able to do it, the better way that we'll be able to demonstrate to the world that truly we are that ummat e wasata, a nation most balanced. Salawat. So the Holy Quran says, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. We hear this ayah. Let us ponder upon it for a minute as we talk about the value proposition of Ihsan. That truly, the human being has been created, this ayah says, in the best of molds. There are many translations of the term fi ahsani taqwim. One of the interpretations is, it's like a mold. And when you have a mold, it depends on what the mold is, and if you put the liquid in it with the injection or whatever they call it, and out of it comes a shape that you intend to create. And that is something, when we talk about the best of molds, then the human being has been created in a way that the human being is valuable. Because we have been created in the best of mold and the best of shape. Therefore, every human being is valuable. And as we said a couple of days ago, this human being, you and I and everybody sitting in this room and elsewhere on this planet, we can rise to a level which is higher than that of the angels. And we can go lower than that of the animals. If, having possessed aql and having possessed the quwwa-e shahwiya and quwwa-e ghadabiya, the power of anger and the power of desires, if I have controlled myself with quwwa-e aqliya, with my aql, with my intellect, then I can go higher than that of an angel, because an angel does not have those two handicaps of kuwa adabiya and kuwa shahabiya. An angel only has the faculty that we share of intellect. An angel can do no sin. But if having possessed those faculties of going down to that level, we control ourselves, we go beyond the angels. And the animals have not been given akal, they have been given the power of desire and the power of anger. And when the animals do that, they do that out of their fitrah. They do that out of their instinct. They cannot control themselves. A lion will go out and hunt and kill because it needs to. It is their fitrah, it is their instinct. But if we, as human beings, do not use our akal, our intellect, and go and kill, then we are lower than that of that animal, because having possessed that akal, we did not use it. And therefore, the value proposition of insan is that we can rise above the level of angels. And this is the value proposition. So what do we have? In the time that we have, that we are made up of what we are, and we are who we are because, firstly, Allah has blessed us with some kind of natural and physical makeup. We are different shapes, we are different colors, we have different personalities. Two siblings in a house will have totally different personalities, different traits. And you know, there are many, many ways to be able to assess. For example, Myers-Briggs is one of them. There are so many other ways that you actually determine some of the personality traits. So this is what you are born with. And then you actually form certain things. A continual repetition of certain acts will make you to a certain disposition that you'll have certain habit. I hope that I'm conveying this, because in the interest of time, I cannot go into many examples. But this is a creative audience. This is also an audience where Allah has blessed this audience with quwwat wahmiya, the faculty of imagination. So you can imagine the different traits that we may have. And then whatever the traits we may have. For example, somebody is born with a trait which we call introversion, and some are born with a trait which is called extroversion. Now, if you have somebody who is an introvert with a trait, and neither is good or bad, although in marketing terms, sometimes the extrovert tends to win. So what happens is that you change your trait by conscious practice. If you realize that being an introvert with the trait of introversion, your job demands, if you're in marketing, you need to go out and do something more, you will make a conscious effort to make a change. And this is what we mean, that practice and continuous effort. So we are what we are with these three things. And then you find in a society that you have a perfectionist, that if it's not perfect, then don't do it. You have a dreamer with great ideas, but there is no action. You have a worrier who fears change and says change may spoil everything, therefore I don't do anything. There's a crisis maker who will find a problem everywhere where it doesn't exist. And there's an overdoer like me who takes on too many tasks and not being able to do anything well. So we have different kinds of people in a society. And if we understand our weaknesses, if we understand our handicaps, then we can do a better job of who we are. But then we have to model ourselves on something in order to achieve that, in order to be part of delivering what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us, which is the best of molds. The human potential is just unimaginable. We only use a very small part of our brain. We could all be Einsteins if we could use just a little more of our brain. This truly is a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, my young friends, understand as you go through life, you can be what you want to be. Yes, you can. And this has to be modeled on something. And allow me to quote Shaykh Ustad Mutahhari. In his book, The Polarization, about the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. And he describes in the book, and I recommend if you have not read it, it's one of the most profound books It's such an easy read, and it's available on alislam.org. It's available in print. It was in Farsi. It's been translated in English. And it's a wonderful book to understand the character of Maulana Muttaqi Khan Ali ibn Abi Talib al-Islam. And he writes in the book, he says there are four kinds of people in a society. There is one who comes, earns his living, uses his 86,400 seconds every day for achieving nothing important, and he goes, he leaves this world. There is no impact upon him by of the society, and there is no impact of him on the society. And therefore his life is just like peacefully flowing water. He has come like a donkey, he has grazed his grass, and then he's gone away. That's one kind of a person. Then Shaykh Ustad Muttahari talks about a second kind of person. And this person is one whose impact is always negative. Wherever he is, there is problem, there is strife. Wherever he is or she is, I don't want to be sort of gender biased here. We have in a society which is should be gender blind in many, many ways. So he or she will bring problems where they do not exist. And some of the big tyrants that we have seen in our time, Hitler, Saddam Hussein, many others, their impact is always negative upon a society. There's nothing good. And when they leave, people breathe a sigh of relief and say, thank God he has gone. And people are relieved. And then you have the third kind, who is always positive. Someone who can be a phenomenal diplomat. He is nice with everybody. There is not an enemy that he has, because he agrees with everybody. I call him a diplomat of the Muawiyan ilk. The idea is that you have no principles. Somebody tells you one thing, you stand with him. And then yesterday our respected speaker in Farsi said, Ifrat and Tafrit. You know, there's always going around, you know, from one part to another, flipping, flip-flops, whatever we call it in modern political parlance. His impact is always good around people around him. But this person does not have principles. He just looks at the pragmatic thing to do at the time, and he does it. The great philosopher, poet of the East, Allama Iqbal, describes him within the Indian culture that he used to write his poetry on, that when you have such a person in a society, and when he dies, the Muslims will give him ghusl with the water of Zamzam, and then the Hindus will go and cremate him because he was nice with everybody. This person, one needs to be careful. And finally, Shaykh Ustad Muttahari says that there is a person whose impact upon society is both negative and positive. The impact is negative when he stands up for a cause and he says, this is a man, and I paraphrase, a woman with a mission. You stand on your principles. You do not flip-flop. You stand up. This is what Karbala teaches us, that you stand up for a principle. You do not make compromises. You do not compromise with oppressors. You do not compromise with something even. You are a person of justice. That when even you have that justice that actually goes against your own self, you will still stand up for that level of justice. The oft-quoted idea about the justice of Ali ibn Abi Talib, which is well known, is that look at how subtle and how fine the justice of Ali ibn Abi Talib is. He was in court as a defender. And the plaintiff, and the custom in those days was, the plaintiff and the defendant would both sit next to each other. So the judge calls upon Maulana Muttaqi Khan. First he calls upon the plaintiff and says, Fula bin Fula, come and sit here. And then he said, oh, Abel Hassan, please come and grace the chariot as a defendant. And when he said that, Imam Ali's face changes. There is a frown on his face. And the judge says, oh, Abel Hassan, is it that you do not like to sit next to the plaintiff? We can have a special place for you. And Imam says, you haven't understood, have you? By calling him with his name, Fulan bin Fulan, and by calling me by my kunya to say, oh, Abul Hassan, you as a judge have already shown preference towards me. You are not fit to be a judge. This is the fine line in terms of justice and standing up. Sheikh Ustad Mutahari says that this was the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, a man with a mission, and this is the person that we need to model ourselves to say when we talk about the value proposition of insan, this is the epitome of somebody who was the perfect insan. Salamat. And allow me to quote him. He says, self-consciousness is one of the most profitable assets of a person. Trying to understand oneself. How do you see yourself? When you're looking at what is my value proposition to the world, so that I become part of this ummat-e-wasata, a nation most balanced, I must be a single individual who becomes part of ummat-e-wasata. How do I see myself? Well, sometimes we see ourselves in the mirror and we see something different. Because we do not want to take on the responsibility of truly seeing who we are. And again, to use the words of Maulana Rum, you know, he said in his own inimitable way, and he said that all my life I kept looking at the mirror. The dust was on my face, but I was actually wiping the mirror. Understand the subtlety of saying the dust was on my face, but because I wasn't self-conscious, I thought the dust was on the mirror, I kept cleaning the mirror. You cannot clean the mirror and clean yourself. This indeed is the idea of that self-consciousness. So again, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, self-knowledge is the most beautiful knowledge and the most beneficial knowledge of all. So we need to know our strong points. We thank Allah for the points that He's given, that we are happy. And we work towards enhancing them. But at the same time, we must know what our handicaps are, what our faults are, so that there is true self-cognition to say that I am who I am. And then I can start building upon what we do. And this is where we come to the core of the subject for today's session, to say this is self-esteem and self-worth. These two terms need to be understood in their proper perspective. Sometimes they are used interchangeably. Does anybody think that these two words are similar or are they different? Self-esteem and self-worth. How many think that they're pretty much similar? And who thinks that they're different? Okay? Right, so we have roughly equal votes. So let's go and determine the idea of self-esteem and self-worth. Self-esteem is your perception of how others view you. Self-esteem is what others think of you. That's your knowledge. So you have a perception that this is how people think about me. That, you know, I'm a great scholar, that I'm a great thinker, that I'm a great business person. That's other people's perception of me. That is called self-esteem. And you know what? Self-esteem may go up and it may go down. If you get an A grade in your test, you feel great, and your self-esteem will go up. You say, I got an A grade. But if you flunk the test for whatever reason, you'll feel terrible and your self-esteem will go down. In our days, you know, the FICO score, the credit score is anything and everything. It defines us. It defines us to the banks and the credit card companies and whoever else. A FICO score is a good example of self-esteem, in the sense that it is the perception of the banks and what are these companies, they escape my memory, the three bureaus, Equifax, the credit bureaus, Equifax and TransUnion or whatever it is. It is their perception of who you are as a person. It is their perception of who you are, how creditworthy you are, based on some of the actions. But it is their perception. You may have $1 million in your bank, but you never use credit, they think you have no credit. This is an example of how others define you. And if we stand up for who we are, and this also points to the Muslims living particularly in the Western world, Mu'mineen, if we do not define ourselves as to who we are, then somebody else will define us. And sometimes we tend to think that how they have defined us is what who we are. And our self-esteem will go up. A non-Muslim will say something nice about Islam, our self-esteem will go up. Well, it's their thinking. My self-esteem or my thinking should not change if a non-Muslim is saying something nice about Islam. That should not prove to me that Islam is a great faith. If the Prophet taught me something, that tells me Islam is a great faith. Many times we have this term called Bukhailism. I call it Bukhailism. Bukhailism is that when something is in the Quran and science proves it, we say, oh my God, you know, science has proved it, therefore the Quran must be right. This is Bukhailism. If science proves something that's in the Quran, it is for the benefit, fabiha, good for science that it's done something that's in the Quran. You do not need some, the Quran, the science for the Muslims to prove that the Quran is right. It's upside down priorities. It is critical thinking that we need to do to say then the faith. This is all when we are suffering from what we call self-esteem. There is that level of weakness of thinking within us that somebody else says something, we suddenly get inflated. And somebody says something bad about us, we suddenly get deflated. The self-esteem can go up. And then there are some people who have a high level of self-esteem. You know, they think so much of themselves because they have this perception. So here is this little cartoon to say your blood pressure is fine, your cholesterol is fine, but your self-esteem is way too high. Well, how do you lower that high self-esteem? I recounted an example when an abid enters the mosque and a fasik enters the mosque. When they leave, the abid has become the fasik and the fasik has become the abid, because the abid had his own self-esteem to say, I am thought of as an abid, and look at this fasik. And the fasik understood his own weakness and prayed to Allah to say, Ya Allah, make me like this abid. And Imam says that when they left, the fasik had become the abid and the abid had become the fasik. We need to think. And then, how do you lower this self-esteem that we have built up because of certain false notions or because of those people who keep praising us? In our vernacular, which is Urdu, it says there are chamchas, you know, there are spoons who actually try and, you know, build you up. And your ego starts going higher and higher and higher. How do you deflate that ego, that esteem? And this is a conversation between Imam Sajjad alayhi salam and his companion Zuhri. You know, Zuhri was one of those people who would admonish and who would preach to everybody. Time came when people saw Zuhri coming on this side of the street, people would go on the other side to say, here comes Zuhri, we're going to get another lecture. So Zuhri goes to Imam and says, how is it that people do not like me anymore? And Imam gave him a lesson in public relations which surpasses every other public relations exercise. He said, oh Zuhri, think of this. If somebody is older than you, then he's had more time to commit good deeds than you. So think well of him. If somebody is younger than you, he's had less time to commit sins than you have. So his sins may be less than yours. Think well of him. And if there's somebody who is your peer, same age as you, he said, oh Zuri, think well of him, because you know the sins that you have done. You don't know the good deeds that he has done. So think well of him. Look at how Aimal Muslim teaches. In terms of balancing our self-esteem and this ego that sometimes we tend to develop. So I come to self-worth. Self-worth is something that you're born with. It is that value proposition of insan as one of his creatures. You are worthwhile and you have value, which cannot be taken away from you. You cannot lose it. You can lose sight of it, but you cannot lose it. That is you. That is what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to each one of us. And that's something we should understand, and we should not allow somebody else to define us. We define ourselves. And therefore, as I said, that my self-worth is not determined by others. That's the difference. Self-esteem is what others think of you. Self-worth is who I truly am. Whatever I am, that is my self-worth. And sometimes we try and look for this somewhere else. The self-worth is within us. We know of the case of Mullah Nasruddin looking for his pen. And Mullah was looking for this pen in the bazaar. Somebody says, let me help you. They couldn't find the pen. And then suddenly they said, Mullah, but where did you lose this pen? He said, well, I lost it at home. Said, Mullah, you lost the pen at home? You're looking for it here in the bazaar? He said, yeah, because there is more light here, so I'm looking for my pen here in the bazaar. Well, you have lost something, your self-worth, which is within you, that you do it yourself. You don't have to go outside and look for it. Your self-worth is within you. Like that pen that Mullah had lost, go find it where it is. Go find that it is within you, inside you. So self-worth is the ability, most importantly, to see as Allah sees you, not as other people see you. That means that brings us to this idea to say that if I am concerned in terms of how Allah sees me, then my level of understanding of Tawheed goes up manifold. If I'm worried as to how others see me, what will they say? If I do something, the first question is in society, I know friends, I know relatives, I know the community, what will they say? Let us first ask ourselves, when we do something, say, what will Allah say? That is the cardinal thing. And the person with self-worth will understand and say that I am more than my body, my emotions, my behavior, that I am a complete being. People who have self-worth are more sensitive morally and ethically. They're more successful in their personal relationships. They're more productive in their jobs. They involve themselves in social and community affairs. And they show generosity towards charitable works and institutions. I do not have time to elaborate on this. I ask you to reflect and think about these things. In fact, there is a study that I read at the University of Michigan that college students who base their self-esteem on external sources like academic performance, appearance, approval from others reported more stress, more anger, academic problems, and relationship conflicts. And those in the same study, students who based their self-worth on internal sources not only felt better, they also received higher grades, were less likely to use drugs and alcohol, na'udzubillah, or eating disorders. They were far balanced students. This is proof. So, what does it mean to build that self-worth? Firstly, stop comparing yourself to others. You are who you are. This is what Allah blessed you with. You be the best person that you are. You know this fingerprint on my thumb? It is totally unique. Because Allah made me unique. There is no other. Anything else is a copy. This is the only original stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, it's making sure that I am involved in meaningful activities like helping others, generosity, humanitarian causes. Because again, there are more studies that show that volunteering has a positive impact on how we feel about ourselves. We know this. We don't need a study to tell us that. If you've done something altruistically, I will go to the Muharram procession on Sunday. I will make sure that I give somebody a bottle of water. I'll give somebody a rose. I'm doing it without any idea of any profit. I'm only doing it for one assignment. So how good that does that make me feel? If I were able to get into that mode every day that I get up, this is the meaning of intentional living, to say that when I have said Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, when I have made the niyyah of qurbatan ilallah, then it becomes my lot to say that I will not harm anybody, that I will always be useful to somebody else. So to end, do not wait. Let us not wait, because Samuel Johnson said, he who waits to do a great deal of good at once will never do anything. Oh, I'll wait, you know, till I have enough money, I'll do some charity. Or when I have enough time, I'll do something good, but I'll wait for the time being. Or what is it, the little thing that I will do? I will actually move on to say that we're told by the Holy Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that the best deeds are those that are done consistently, though little by little. So don't wait to do a lot of good when you say, I will do something in a big way. Every little thing counts. And in the interest of time, inshallah, we'll deal with the starfish story. But I will just say that think of that lizard when that fire was raging for Nabi Ibrahim. And the lizard was throwing little drops of water. And somebody says, what difference is that going to make? And the lizard said, on the day of judgment, I will tell my maker that I tried. This is somebody who has self-worth. So, you need to worry about our character, not about our reputation. Because it's our character which makes us who we are. Your reputation is only what other people think who you are, and that is the difference between self-worth and self-esteem and self-worth. Salawat. Imam Muhammad Baqir al-Sam said, and I quote, that God has bestowed on the believer three qualities. This is the worth of a human being: honor in this world and in the hereafter, salvation in both the worlds, and fear of him in the hearts of the oppressors. This is where a person stands up as a man of mission, that I will not compromise. The oppressors will look at that person, a believer, and say that this believer will not compromise. Is that not the idea of social justice in Karbala? Well, I will leave you with this. A man comes, according to Imam Ali alayhi salam, to the Blessed Prophet and asks him to teach him an action that what Allah and the people would want: love him, his wealth would increase, his body would be healthy, his lifetime would last long, and that he would be raised with him, meaning with the Prophet. And the Blessed Prophet says that these are six traits which need six qualities. Is there anybody here who does not wish to have these six things? We all do. Inshallah, we will cover this tomorrow in the interest of time as to what the response was from the Blessed Prophet as to how do we achieve these six things. It is possible. These are the blessed words of the Prophet. His words cannot be in vain. His promise cannot be faulty. He has promised it. Inshallah, in the interest of time, we'll continue with this. Tonight we want to remember the women in Karbala. The women who gave their all. When they were there, they were able to sacrifice so much. Mominin, of course, we had Lady Zainab Salamullahi Alayha. And then we had all the others, the mother of Aliaska, Bibi Rabah, the mother of Ali Akbar, Umm Layla, Umm Farwa, the mother of Qasim, and many other mothers who were there to support, who were there to carry this message forward. They knew the worth of their lives, and they knew the worth of the lives of their children. We pay tribute to them as we gather, and we will continue to pay tribute to them after the day of Ashura, when they had to carry the message. Every revolution has blood, and it has message. It was the women of Karbala who were able to carry that message forth. But on the day of Ashur, they sacrifice. They sacrifice their offering. And I'm reminded of Lady Zainab, when she goes to her brother, and Imam Hussein al-Islam declines to send the two sons, one in Muhammad, to go out to the battlefield. The two boys go to their uncle and say, oh uncle, allow us. Our mother is asking us to come to you to allow us. And Imam says, oh my sons, you're not baligh yet. You're not come of age yet. Jihad is not wajib upon you. The words that the two young men gave to Imam Hussein shows that they understood what their proposition was as human beings. Even at that young age, they said, oh uncle, we jihad may not be wajib upon us, but truth is wajib upon everyone. We want to sacrifice our lives. I don't have the eloquence to be able to recite the happenings on that day as to how the two brothers go and fight so valiantly. All I can imagine is that there is a mother looking from the tent to see how the two boys are doing amongst the other mothers. But Mominin, do you know that Abu Miknaf reports this to say that every time when the bodies of the Shuhada were being brought, every time that the bodies of the Shuhada were being brought back to the tents or near the tents, the Bibi Zainab Salamullahi Alayha would come and receive the bodies when the bodies of Umar and Muhammad came. It is said that Bibi Zainab Salamullahi Alayha was nowhere to be seen. Where was Bibi Zainab? It is said that She was Ramasalla, she was on her prayer mat, saying that shukr to say, Ya Allah, you have accepted my sacrifice. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un.